Hello, and welcome to another episode of the Nintendo Entertainment Podcast. I am Triforce Todd, and joining me today is Wario Will.
Okay. One more week until Astrotrain comes out, and plus we're trying to get through the summer heat. I don't know, like, just a few minutes ago, there was like a sudden flash flood shower. All of a sudden, like, it was just pouring so hard out there. So I hope everyone's having a good night so far.
Yeah. I had a freak storm like that on Tuesday. It was like cloudy, then it started pouring down rain. There was a wind advisory. When do you get wind advisories, all right? And there was like severe thunderstorms, and then like 4 hours later it was sunny outside. I'm like, what the heck? Make up your mind.
I didn't expect this kind of weather in Florida, but yeah.
I live in Illinois, for the record. So all right, and of course Tullius Tyler is here.
Did we not get a music intro from Will? I mean, this has got to be the first time in at least a year of episodes.
There really is no like music bit I can actually do right now. Again, we are waiting for Astro Chains, and nothing really pops up during the time of my work day. So excuse me if anyone was expecting that.
Life finds a way. Huh. All right. I try to get wise on you all, and you just don't get the reference. Moving on. So we got a very interesting show for you today, but we'll get a start off with, of course, what have you been playing? Welcome to the spoiler cast. We're going to tell you every single detail about Fire Emblem Three Houses. I'm kidding. And actually, I'm glad we are imposing our non-spoiler rule part two and beyond, because I have been, of course, playing Fire Emblem Three Houses, and I am now way deep into part two. Okay, I say way deep, but I found out that I'm not that deep, actually, because chapter 12 is the part one, part two break, and then you start off after that. I'm apparently only on chapter 16. I didn't realize that because it felt like I've been a lot farther, but that's because I've been doing a lot of paralogues. I've been doing a lot of like the missions to get your EXP up and all that, and I realized I'm like, oh, I'm really not that far. And yeah, I'm really far, because this thing got dark. All right, I mean, we talked about this last week's episode about how dark Fire Emblem was. Well, we were talking about the character stories. I'm talking story now. It's like I knew that Aelgard's would probably be the darkest one. I can't speak for the church route, because that's what Tyler's doing, but like, there's some weird stuff going on. There's some dark stuff going on. And the missions. I really want to point out how great the missions are. Because when I did my Blue Lion drone, this is a super slight spoiler, it felt like the mission parameters were always the same. Kill the enemy commander or rout the enemy. And I'm speaking strictly on story missions here. And, but with Edelgard's run, I'm having more fluidity in it. I had a defending mission once or twice. I had, kill specific people, like the commanders would have had the badges, whether it be like a knight or a horseman or whatever. That was good. And I like it. It reminds me of Fates, because Fates had, Birthright, which was very straightforward. Conquest was a little more complicated, and then Revelation was like the middle ground between the two. And so I like having the different challenges. I was talking with the guys about a paralogue mission I did, where at the beginning of the mission, you have two objectives. You can either win the map by routing the enemy, or you can get a certain character to a certain spot on the map, which of course is on the other side, surrounded by enemies, etc., etc. So I decide, I'm just going to do route the enemy, get the experience, because this is really hard, because again, I'm playing on the higher difficulty, and I'm blazing through, and then all of a sudden, boom, reinforcements arrive. I'm like, okay, kind of bad. I had to do a turn back just to get my characters into better positions so they wouldn't be, ambushed and annihilated. And I'm doing all right. And then all of a sudden, I one of the characters says that we lost. I'm like, no one died. How did I lose? And then I recheck the conditions, and it goes, oh, by the way, now an enemy commander can get to that spot you were trying to get to, and if they do that, you lose. Yeah, it was. I was really mad. And I literally had to start the whole map over, because of the positioning I had my characters in. There was no way to kill all. There was four commanders via the reinforcements, and there was no way to kill all the commanders in time. And I was like, oh, crap. So, like, but that's the difficulty I want, because I want it to be challenging to me. And the higher difficulty definitely is. Tyler, you win. Fine.
Let me just point out to the people how hilarious our conversation in the chat was. Todd said, my Edelgard playthrough is so much harder than the last time, and I don't know why. But, folks...
I didn't say that. I just said I noted that was significantly harder.
No,
and
you said, I don't understand why. And then I said, maybe that's because you're not playing on normal. You're playing on hard this time.
Yeah.
Which I would say is a valid explanation.
Well,
for
it wasn't. Like, for example, and this is not a spoiler, I had a mission where I had to face certain opponents. can't say names. And one of them had the ability to hit me with like 65 damage, even though we were on the same level. And I'm like, even in the easier difficulties, I had, you know, enemies like the Demonic Beast who could hit me with a lot of damage, and I understood that. But the fact that they could literally wipe out my Edelgard, who has, like, 65 health, or my Kaspar, who is quickly becoming one of my favorite units physicality-wise, who has, like, 67 health, you know, the fact that they could wipe me out with such a high percentage was just a little baffling to me, but, you know, whatever. It was just how they... And then again, and then any other character who wasn't one of them did it most, like, 20 damage. So this one character doing three times more than any other character on the map. That was mind-boggling to me. And they didn't even have a sacred weapon or anything like that. It was just, boom, magic, or boom, axe, or boom,
yes,
sword.
Yes, yes,
exactly.
Yes.
It was weird. So that's all I meant. But I know that the higher difficulty was harder. I knew that like a few missions in when I felt that I wasn't getting a lot of experience for killing people. You know, I knew it was harder, but you know, that's also why I trained better to have a much more balanced team. So, which has been a boon to me.
Question, have you also been using the experience gems as well?
Yeah. I have, and I haven't. I have it, and I've used it, I think, on like one or two characters. Because again, my team's really balanced. When I had it in my Blue Lions run, I used it on Manuela because at the time she wasn't at a decent level. And then she got back up to me. I used it on Catherine to get her up to my Dimitri and Byleth levels. And, you know, I'll use it now, but it's just I would literally be swapping it from like character to character because I honestly have a team that's only within like one or two levels of each other because of how I play the game now. So... But yeah, and I'm glad you found that, Will, because I know you were asking me about that when I mentioned it the first time. I was like, what's an experience gem?
So. Yeah, again, I wasn't as deep as you two guys. And I mean, I pretty much got area of the gems, like the experience gem, the training gems, especially that training gem in which you gain more weapon experience. Like, that thing is a godsend.
Okay,
so
wait a minute.
That's how I meant.
Where'd you get the training gem? I don't know that one.
It's not really that's the exact name. It's like where you equip it and you get like extra boost points in your weapon stats, like when you like experiences, like for the sword, bows, the riding skills.
Good to know.
Yeah, it's actually, I believe it's in one of the chests. Last I remember, the first.
Oh, okay,
that's
why I don't have it. It's a chest item. But anyway, I'm of course really enjoying this. I could just read the support conversations all day.
Oh, yep.
I was doing this mission and I beat it. And as always, once I get to a spot, I check the support conversations and I had like 10. And so I'm just like going through them, and each of them is just infinitely enjoyable, and it's hilarious how these characters act with one another. And going back to what we were talking about with marriage a few weeks ago, I do wish that we could control who marries who outside of Byleth, because
no, you can actually.
Okay, tell me more.
It's very complicated.
Oh gosh.
So in your ally menu, so if you open up the roster and you go to that menu that looks like a class clipboard that on one of those screens, I think, I forget which one, but there's a list of closest allies, and whoever the number one ally is on that list is
okay,
who.
Okay.
So you can tell, and you can change that by having them fight next to each other, fight alongside each other.
Right, right.
So whoever accumulates the most points that way.
Okay. I figured that's what it was, but it just felt odd because during my Blue Lions run, I noted that Felix married Dorothea and then Ingrid married Sylvain. But I remember teaming Sylvain and Dorothea up a lot more than I did, Dorothea and Felix. But then again, I guess I was wrong. But
it's very possible that, I don't know, maybe there's modifiers for like certain characters
are more likely.
But whoever the number one ally is on there works. Plus, you could have, Dorothea, I assume you have is healing. So maybe you healed Felix a lot because he's probably on the front lines a lot.
Maybe.
And that boosts points.
It is kind of like RNG a little bit based on that check, because Yeah, it feels like, yeah.
But like I my Dorothea, which I've had in both runs, is my one of my aces in the hole. She is an amazing healer, and her range when you get her to the what was it called, the Grimoire or
Grimory,
whatever.
Grimory.
Yeah. She her range for psychic is so freaking huge. I literally had her on the left side of a map and she could heal someone on the far right side of the map. I'm like, "Dang, girl."
Yeah. So like once you get that magic range, like you pretty much just need like one or two just to like cover the entire map. Yeah, it's pretty yeah. amazing. Yeah.
And then with her dark magic, her reasoning abilities, she's just a monster. And then with Meteor, yeah, you only get two shots, but I can do a major damage to one character and do damage to side characters to ensure they don't strike back when I fight them at times. So yeah, but I'm loving the characters. I have narrowed down who I'm going to marry Byleth to Dorothea or Shamir. And I'm leaning towards Dorothea because I really use the support conversations to guide whether I want Byleth to be with this person for one reason or another. And that's why I had a lot of struggle in my Blue Lion run because I had like five ladies who I was really close to and I wanted them to be happy. Shamir's A support just didn't resound with me, whereas Dorothea is just like tugged on my heartstrings. So I kind of want to marry her just so I can make her happy. So,
yeah, but I actually just got to Shamir's A rank myself, and yeah, it didn't have as much as an impact, granted,
yeah.
But Orpheus is like, and I kind of spoiled myself on the S rank, and it will strike you,
Which one, Shamir's or Dorothea's?
Dorothea's S rank. I kind of spoiled myself a little bit. I haven't spoiled on Shamir's S rank, but
yeah.
All I just gotta say is like the lady's S rank is like it strikes you so hard.
Good. Then my decision is made. It shall be Dorothea. So now, and then I have no idea who I'm going to marry on the Golden Deer run because I've only had interactions with like one of the characters intentionally because I'm trying to save myself for the Golden Deer run. But we'll see how it goes. But yeah, I've been enjoying the game. Combined. I'm at like 80 hours, but again, I'm only at chapter 16. So that was, it was 45 for my Blue Lions run. So, I'm not even to 35 hours with Edelgard yet, but it's not going to be the 80 hours that Tyler spent on his Golden Deer. I don't know how he took that long. Maybe he needs to get good.
Actually, I might as well confess. I am currently sitting at that 80 hour mark myself right now. So
shock.
Yes.
Shock.
If you like go through and do every support conversation and I talk to every person and you garden
doing,
and you
yeah.
fish at the monastery, I think
like
the 80-hour mark is about where that'll get you. I'm actually on my Edelgard run. I skipped through a decent amount of the like repeated dialogue in the beginning of the game,
I'm actually
still on pace to do that about 82-hour range. Although I've recruited pretty much every student except for Marianne, who just would not join me on the last day. She was very interested in joining but would not join, so I didn't get her, but everybody else I got. So I'm gonna have a ton of paralogues to play through,
yeah,
a ton of battles. That's probably also where you get a lot of extra. I would battle like probably six times a month at the end because resting, that's overrated.
Yeah. That's pretty much what I'm at right now. I pretty much got everybody, and like the paralogs are just opening up. I have currently four paralogs for this current month right now. Yeah, it pretty much is a lot to do once you get if you get everybody.
I'm thinking that when I do the church run, because my plan is that I'm trying to do every run differently. So like the Blue Lion run was like my test one, and that's like why I recruited Catherine and Manuela. I got Catherine on accident, but I wanted Manuela. And then this run I got Shamir because I didn't have her before. And then with the next one, I'm probably going to get Hanuman or Alois just to see if I can grab them for the Golden Deer. And then for the church run, I'm going to try and recruit as many of my favorite characters as I can to have like an all-star team.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
Yeah.
It's tough because I'm doing like in the church run now, I'm not going to get it. I'll probably be even longer at the end because I keep using everyone and I want to just like hone down on a specific team. Part of me wants to, because it's just so inefficient to be like wasting your teaching on the cast of now, I guess I have like 23 students or something around there, including some of the professors. And like I Hanuman, I always just like, he just goes by the wayside. Manuela, she's by the wayside, and Alois, not using him either, but pretty much every student I have been using, and because I want to get their paralogs and enjoy them, and I'm sure that they have to be at a higher level for the later ones, so it's tricky to kind of manage your roster that way. And I do think that the story, and I would assume that the church path is the least like this, but I think that the other stories, like the Golden Deer story, would not have had as much punch if I had recruited people from the different classes out the wazoo. It just wouldn't have, because you're fighting them in the second part of the game, and if you recruit them, they're replaced by faceless soldiers, which is obviously not as emotionally deep as the other, as you know, actually fighting against the students that you experienced at the monastery. So yeah, but I do think that if you're ever going to do that, just massive recruitment run, the church route's probably the best option to do it.
I think with, in regards to recruiting the other classes to yours, I think I got one of the better experiences when I did Dorothea for the Blue Lions run, because there was a moment where I had to kill one of the Black Eagles members during a story battle, and you talk to her in the next month, and she's basically crying, and she has a nickname for everyone on the Black Eagles, and she goes, "Professor, we killed," insert nickname here. And I would never have gotten that with the other members, because they're like, "Oh yeah, we know them, but we don't know them." But Dorothea was with the Black Eagles until I recruited her, so she knew everyone rather well. And to see her act like that it added a little more weight to the storyline.
But then again,
if I had recruited all the Black Eagles, and then we wouldn't have gotten that storyline or that little text thing. So it's a fascinating thing. There's so much depth.
She's
in
a good
game.
One, I think, to recruit as a commoner. She does feel like she would fit in anywhere.
Yeah.
Because actually, that's one thing I really like about the combos when you have with them. It really has a lot of important details. Like, for example, when I recruited Lorenz of the Golden Deer, he mentioned that, like, even though I am not part of the Golden Deer house anymore, I still have respect for Claude. And, like, yeah, it's like this minuscule details that they all have that actually, like, really... like shows the effect of your decisions when recruiting them. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. I still love my Golden Deer students so much. Like when I recruited pretty much all of them, I immediately just had a Golden Deer reunion battle where we just rolled out Leonie and Hilda and Lorenz, just the whole squad was out there. And then that was the time where I was like, you know what? I've experienced these characters' story already. Like, let's really focus on the Black Eagles. So how I've done it now is just, I'm using the Black Eagles for the story with some plug-in characters just to fill out the roster. And I find that's been very enjoyable. Petra and Aspar have a great support conversation.
It doesn't always work.
Like, it could be a little more impactful. I'm not sure what the missing component is. I feel like they could have used, like, a B-plus conversation. I think they just had B, C, and A. Like a little intermediary. But their A support, like, really... fits into our discussion about kind of heavy themes in Nintendo, because it went away I did not expect.
Yeah, it's kind of weird how some conversations only, or some support conversations only go to like B rank, like Edelgard and Petra. They only go to B rank. You'd think that the way they talk to each other, they would go to A rank, but it doesn't. It just stops at B. It's weird.
Yeah. But I'm sure they had to. Like, I kind of like it, honestly. It makes it feel like the characters that do have an A rank, those relationships are more meaningful. Like you just don't click with everybody all the time. And even though in those B conversations, the characters tend to become friends, it's just they're not as close as some of the other characters are, which I like from a writing perspective. I think that makes sense.
Right. And plus, like, again, they have to voice everything out. So I think that's going to cost a little bit much on the budget, I believe. Yes.
All right. So that's enough about me talking about Fire Emblem. Let's have you guys talk about Fire Emblem.
well, for me, as usual, I've been aside from the three houses, like, I've been playing a bit more on Fire Emblem Heroes. I mean, again, the legendary banner, it is RNG such a cruel mistress. I mean, aside from getting a brave arm, that's pretty much all I got right now, so I'm just barely wasting orbs, which really stinks. RNGesus, why you gotta be so cruel? And yeah, also briefly, I just managed to go play the Dragon Quest XI S demo, which, I mean, we'll be talking more a little bit later on, but this is how you're supposed to do a demo right. I mean, Nintendo, you've come a long way since the Wii U and the limited play trials back in the day, if you remember that. Like, you only could play it like 10 times before you had to, like, nope, you can't play anymore, you gotta buy it. Like, Nintendo, this is how you do a demo, and especially a demo like this bulky, like 10 hours of content, if you want to do everything. That's just simply amazing. That's amazing. So yeah, like Dragon Quest XI, I've been trying a little bit out of it, And of course, Three Houses, which I'm just currently fishing for the elusive goddess messenger fish, which that rainbow fish is like. I don't know. I really find it very like, what's the word, like very engaging when like when you see that rainbow fish pop out of there. It's like, yep, it's go time. And I don't know. I'm currently on that day where you get that rare fish and just getting ready for the coming months ahead. But overall, yeah, Three Houses. I know I'm slow, but I'm slowly making my way, training everybody up and getting everybody's support conversations. Is like, yeah, it's as you said, Ty, is like that's kind of like what the bad thing about me recruiting everybody is, like, I want to hear everybody's combos. Like, I want to hear Raphael's, I want to hear Lorenz, what's Felix background. Is like, yeah, I'm trying to like build all these conversations, because again, the conversations, the combo ranks, it does matter when in battle. So that's kind of like the major downfall of recruiting everybody. Like, you want to get everybody and to hear their stories. So that's kind of like my curse currently, yeah. Right now.
No, I hear that. The Blue Lions that I recruited, because that's the next playthrough I'm going to do, and I probably will wait until Lunatic comes out for it, but I actually have done their support conversations. Like, I click it and then I skip it, because I want to experience that on that playthrough.
Right. And so, yeah, overall, like, it's been... aside from that, it's just kind of been generally a quiet week again. I'm still trying to work on this review of Omega Labyrinth. I know, I can feel the stare from Todd. And again, I'm just can't wait for Astral Chain that's coming out next week. It's just only 7 days away, boys.
Yeah, I'm trying hard to get through Edelgar, because I know I won't be able to get through Golden Deer before I get to Astral Chain. And I want to play Astral Chain, which I'll be talking about a little bit later. But So I need to at least get through this second playthrough.
Right. Everybody, yeah, pretty much everyone on YouTube comments is saying, like, I gotta play through my Fire Emblem right before Astral Chain. Yeah.
Go.
Fun fact. I went into a video game store in my hometown called Video Game World. They have all sorts of like super old collectible stuff, yeah. And I picked up a $5 copy of Mario Paint to add to my Super Nintendo collection.
Oh man!
They had some really good stuff there. Just all sorts of either games from my childhood that I forgot about, like some of them just like being. Like Sonic Riders. I saw the Sonic Riders.
Oh, Sonic Riders. Oh, man.
Great game. Love that. They have the Chibi Robo amiibo. I didn't buy it, but they have the Chibi Robo amiibo there. I don't know if that's readily available anywhere, but I was shocked because I haven't seen that in a store.
That is rare. That is a rare amiibo, yes.
Yeah. I probably should have picked it up, but I didn't. And then I actually picked up Tales of Vesperia Definitive Edition for Switch. I haven't played it yet because obviously I'm playing Fire Emblem, and I've talked enough about my playthrough of that, so I don't need to continue on there. But I really like this shop. I kind of want to find others near me. I'm sure that there are plenty in the city that had some neat finds. But I've expanded my Switch collection by one more game before Astral Chain comes out, and I do think I'm gonna have to play that like when it launches. But I don't know. It does look really, really good. It's just the stuff that came out about it today, we'll talk about. I'm afraid it might be a little too complex, like, for my tastes. But, yeah, I'm excited for it as well.
So, yeah, it's... And then less than a month, we're now only, like, a month or so away from Link's Awakening coming out. And
yeah,
like,
so good. I love that art. That art has really grown on me.
I'm definitely going to get it, just because Link's Awakening was my first Zelda game, and I never beat it, because that was the time before guides and such, so I couldn't get the eighth instrument to wake up the windfish in the Yoshi egg because reasons. But I definitely got to beat it now. And, you know, I'll admit, I didn't really like the art style when I first saw it, but, you know, it's just a style change. That's all it is. It's still going to be the Link's Awakening that I know. It's just going to be in a slightly more cutesy style. So... Also, I want to run this by you. A friend of mine on Twitter had an idea, and it goes like this. The Link's Awakening, like the remake, the Link's Awakening art style for Chrono Trigger. What do you think?
First of all, I am offended that friend of the show, Kremlin Kevin, is just a friend of yours and not a friend of ours.
I thought it was him at first, and then I'm like, No, wait a minute. Maybe that wasn't him. So I just said friend of mine to cover my bases. I couldn't remember if it was Kevin or not.
He is, yes. Yes.
Okay, it was our dear friend Kevin Kremlin. Kremlin Kevin. And he said, like, hey, let's have a Chrono Trigger remake in the visual style of the new Link's Awakening game. And I'm like, that could work.
That could work. I don't know. I like the Chrono Trigger, like, just SNES style. But I would love maybe a Dragon Quest XI S where you can flip between the two styles. That would be the ideal.
That would be cool.
Like an Octopath Traveler style, I would say, is the number one style I'd like to see for it. But
yeah. All right. Well, despite it being a slightly slower news week, we do have a lot of stuff to talk about. So it's time to go down the warp pipe. And first up, let's talk about one of the big news is Gamescom-wise for Nintendo, and that is Indie World. We got a new Nindies presentation where they showed off 29 different indie titles that are coming to the Nintendo Switch either this year or soon after. And first of all, 29 titles, that's a lot to fit into one show, but they made it work. And I would say, I'm saying this objectively because someone on this podcast did not watch it.
No, I did not watch it, and I should have, but I didn't. And then when I saw the highlights on Twitter, I was like, oh, well, the only one I'm interested in is Ori, so.
Yeah, well, yeah, and that is, of course, the big piece of news is they ended it with revealing that we're getting the definitive edition of Ori and the Blind Forest in a 1080p, 60 frames per second, all the content. This is the best version of Ori, more or less, and we're getting it on Switch, and we're getting it soon, I believe, isn't it? Like next month or
it's
something?
It's in September, yeah.
Yes, yeah, September. So we're less than a month away, and that's pretty cool. Because that was an Xbox exclusive.
Correct. Oops. And it's yeah, like the first when they showed it, I mean, Koopa Keef pretty much predicted regarding to this. I mean, it was a matter of time because again, it was kind of like an indie per se. So yes, like appearing on Xbox, it was a nice thing. But a lot of people, including myself, was wondering like if Ori would ever make it to Switch-wise. And yeah, it just now confirmed here. It seems like a perfect fit. And also just to like celebrate the partnership between Nintendo and Microsoft. Microsoft Studio Games with Nintendo, which is like. I don't know that I would see those two game companies in the same title in a same trailer, which is like that's pretty mind boggling.
Well, I mean, you could argue that we had it with the Banjo trailer, you know, raring to go.
That too. But was there a Microsoft logo on that trailer?
Well, not a logo, but they own Rare, and they said raring to go, which is a reference to the company that makes that technically owns the characters. So,
but it doesn't say the word Microsoft on it.
Oh gosh.
I'm sorry, that was in the details and all that. I know. But, yeah, like, personally for me, I can't wait for Ori and the Blind Forest. I heard just many good things about this game, like, to the point that it's, like, very reminiscent to, like, Silk... What was that indie title, like, with the bug, Silk Knight, something like that? I forgot the name. Oh, man.
Hollow Knight.
Hollow Knight, thank you. Yeah, like... Big success on Switch, by the way. It really reminds me of like how very similar impactful feel. So if you want something that's like really gonna hit you in the feels, that's gonna possibly make you cry, this is like probably one of the titles to get if you haven't played it yet already.
I've heard so many things about Ori and the Blind Forest, and then the sequel Will of the Wisps, and I hear that this is like one of the most touching and beautiful games of like the last 5 years or so. You know, and there's no voice acting if I recall. It's just visuals, and yet they tell this heartbreaking story of this, you know, this creature in this forest that's dying and all that. And I, even though I've got like so many games to play, I'm gonna try and get it because I've just heard so many wonderful things, and you don't get that kind of word of mouth unless the game is special.
Yeah, it's definitely a must buy for me when it launches. And yeah, I mean, I think it's just one of the few Microsoft exclusives that I really am. I would like to play, and I think are they on 2 or 3 right now? I know they revealed another one at E3 this year. I don't know if that's the third game or the second game.
That's the second. Will the
Wisps. Second game. I think that was like two years beforehand. It was like still in development currently right now.
Yeah.
Okay. Gotcha. Yeah. I know that they showed it off at E3 this year, and that looked like definitely one of the few Microsoft titles that I was like, oh dang, I have to get that. And also, I can confirm, unfortunately for Will, I believe Will was on the side that said there was no Microsoft on the Banjo trailer, there was a Microsoft logo on the
Okay, okay, I stand corrected.
Yeah, that was a tough look for our guy.
Yeah. That's why I'm the host.
Right. you knew that was the next line.
Actually, I do want to apologize because in my hostly duties, I forgot to talk about the most important news story of the week first. So allow me to rewind so we can talk about the crap that is the Marvel Sony Spider-Man deal.
I know. What? Depression.
Depression, heartbreak, Tyler all over the internet.
I'm so sad. I am absolutely miserable about this.
Yeah, it's bad. We're not really going to talk about it. Although we could, because Spider-Man has been on Nintendo platforms before, including Marvel Ultimate Alliance 3, where he was played by Yuri Lowenthal, who was the voice of Spider-Man in the PS4 game. But yeah, it did hit me and Tyler pretty hard, and the memes and the art that have come out of this, and it's been two, 3 days, maybe?
Yeah, I think it was honestly 2 days ago.
Yeah, my personal favorite is the scene from Homecoming, where they go, okay, Tony goes, okay, it's not working out, I need the suit back. Peter, as Marvel, who, for how long? Sony, Stark, forever!
Oh, gosh. And my new roommate has a PlayStation 4, and I was all geared up to finally get to play the new Spider-Man PS4 game, and now I'm like, I don't know if I want to buy it. I don't want to give Sony my money.
You need to. Trust me. If I got a PS4, that would be one of the first games I buy.
It's the only game that I want to play outside of a couple old ones that my younger brother got me for the PS4. But I just I would feel so dirty supporting Sony at a time like this.
I know.
I think the only reason you should probably get... I mean, the only thing you probably should get is because, again, that is probably the last game of Stan Lee. So, yeah, I think that's probably a good enough reason.
Yeah. I just want to note, Tyler, that there are conflicting reports about who is to blame, because
they're both to blame.
They
obviously are
both to blame, because I heard Disney wanted a bigger cut of the profits, and then that Sony didn't want to capitulate to that, and then I've heard other things that say that Sony was to blame. So it's going to be a crazy 2 weeks until this all settles out. But yeah, I just had to mention that because Tyler's been dying over here.
The sadness is overflowing.
Yes. Alright, so let's talk about something slightly more positive to a game that I know you love playing on your Nintendo Switch, Mortal Kombat 11.
It's such a great Switch title. Highly recommend. Do not recommend on Switch. Do recommend on other platforms.
Yeah, which is fair. Which we all knew was going to happen eventually. Anyway, but since it is technically a Nintendo Switch title, the final DLC characters for Mortal Kombat 11 have been revealed. Of course, we've already gotten Shang Tsung and Nightwolf, and we already knew about Sindel and the arrival of Spawn, made by another great Todd McFarlane. And now we can confirm that the final two DLC characters are none other than the Joker from DC Comics and the Terminator, the T-800, Arnold Schwarzenegger from Terminator Dark Fate. Will, help me. I can't get rid of this voice. What's wrong with you? I'll be back.
It's just amazing. I mean, granted, it is probably a good cross promotion for the movie, because also, aside from this game, Sarah Connor is actually in Gears of War 5. So,
because
reasons. They really are pushing the Terminator theme in pretty much in many different games. But yeah, I gotta give props to, like, they got Arnold's look so down to the point. It's like, yeah, this is how you do a celebrity cameo icon, like Terminator in Mortal Kombat. Like, wowzers.
Yeah, but then in contrast, the Joker looks like a cosplayer.
Yes,
it's really weird.
I stand by that statement. It's just like, all these times, like from Arkham City, from even the Telltale games, like they kind of nailed the Joker pretty darn well for how it is, even like still like new, but at the same time rooted in its design. This interpretation, it just feels like, are they going for the younger Joker? Are they going to go for something that is like, I don't know, early days? I don't know. It feels like some sort of typical cosplayer.
Yeah, like I'm watching the reveal trailer right now, and I'm looking at, like, I'm just at the scene where they just show him like looking at the camera, and the suit looks fine. I mean, that you could take that a thousand different ways.
Yes, but I'm looking
at his face, and he almost looks too kind. And then he smiles, and I'm like, there's the Joker. But it's just like, when you look at him from just the basic perspective, he doesn't feel like the real Joker. I mean, I've heard people say that he looks rough looking in like the weird way. And that's the other thing, is that Mortal Kombat, the team from Mortal Kombat have had three different way chances to do Joker. They did it in Mortal Kombat versus the DC Universe. Not a good game, but it happened. And then, of course, Injustice 1 and 2, where they had two very different interpretations of Joker.
Yes,
and then
yes,
to go this
yes.
way, just kind of weird. He just looks weird, especially compared to everyone else. I mean, Spawn looks amazing.
Well, yeah.
Yeah, Sindel is, well, it's Sindel. What are you expecting from her? And then, of course, Shang Tsung is amazing via the actor who was in the original Mortal Kombat movie. And Nightwolf looks awesome. And then you have Joker there. And it's just like, oh, I'm here. Like,
yeah,
I don't know. It just feels weird. We do have release dates, though, to talk about. The Terminator is coming out on October 8th. Sindel will be on November 26th. And then Joker will be on January 28th. And Spawn will be the last character on March 17th. So
yeah, that's kind of like the major blow. Like if you're a Spawn fan, like you gotta pretty much wait until next year in March for Spawn, which is like, again, this like take reference. Like you're gonna get Final Fantasy VII Remake before Spawn releases. So like think about that for a second.
It happens. So, well, it's not like what they're doing with Smash Brothers. The only difference between Smash Brothers and Mortal Kombat is that Smash Brothers has been at most. Has revealed two characters that were coming ahead of time via the Hero and Banjo, where they're revealing all the characters now and telling you when you gotta wait for them. So it's that kind of a thing.
I like the Mortal Kombat way more. It's exhausting every day looking at new Banjo speculation videos. Is it September 24th? Because there's a trend, I don't know if you guys know this, but there's a trend that 4 days after Amiibos launch, the new character launches. A new Amiibo come out September 20th, so that means it could be September 24th for Banjo. But, yeah, I would love if Sakurai just said, here's the day.
Yeah, well, hopefully, hey, you never know, maybe the next Nintendo Direct. You never know.
Yeah, probably.
No. Right.
Yeah, but for you Mortal Kombat fans, you got a lot to look forward to, so good for you. All right, our NEP curse has continued because last Friday we got another Pokemon Sword and Shield trailer. I'll admit, though, this one was a little bit smaller. They were focusing on items and abilities and how it will change the dynamic of battle, which I actually found very interesting because you always wonder how they're going to, you know, just tighten it just a little bit with the battles. And apparently they're going to be new abilities, like Galarian Weezing has an ability to wipe out all other abilities on the battlefield. There's going to be certain status effects that can actually reflect status lowering effects on opponents. So if you use like Tail Whip to lower defense of your Pokemon, it would actually reflect onto the Pokemon that used it, which is pretty cool. There's also a new set of items, including like I think it was like a jet pack or ejection pack or something like that. And if you get a status decline, it'll actually swap out with another Pokemon. So that's pretty cool. And then a Dynamax. We are all wondering how far Dynamax will go. Dynamax Pokemon will not have the ability to be flinched out by moves via Fake Out or something like that, or Bite. And then their max moves, which is their super moves, if you will do special bonus effects upon opponents when they're unleashed. So I like this because it's just, again, it's new details, it's new additions to the gameplay, which will make it just that more fun. And, of course, we all love our strategy with our Pokemon games. So I'm glad to see they're, you know, embracing that and just adding these new ideas to the mix, if you will.
I thought this was a really good trailer. I liked it a lot. The battle mechanics look like they're making smart little additions. I really like the eject pack that'll let you swap your Pokemon out if stats are lowered. The Glaring Weezing special ability was really good. This was the first trailer that I thought, okay, I really like this. Outside of the starters reveal, which was always fun.
Yeah, which I wanted to note, we're almost, let's see, like less than 3 months away. We still don't know their final evolutions. And
right.
I like that. Unless, like, I want the suspense. I want, because they're gonna do maybe like the next big trailer. They're gonna reveal it, and I want to know while not having to wait 3 months. So, yeah. But
it'll come.
I like this strategy of like the 2 minute videos. You know, it's simple. You can watch it quickly, and you get a lot of information. It's working, and it keeps us talking about Pokemon.
That's true. I still prefer the big news dump in a Nintendo Direct.
Yeah.
But it is smart to keep people chatting about it. I don't think you get quite that same wave that you do from a Nintendo Direct. And I'm sure we will see a full Pokemon Direct definitely closer to release.
Oh, guaranteed. Guaranteed. So we'll have to wait for that. All right, moving on to the game we're all excited for, Astral Chain. There has, of course, been more... Gamescom has been showing off more videos, which has been exciting. There's been new updates on the Nintendo Twitter handle, always exciting. And then we now have the first reviews from it via Famitsu, who gave it 3 9s and a 10.
Ooh.
So yeah, and Famitsu, they're not afraid to be brutal at times, so I find that rather significant. That being said, it is Platinum, who always tries to appeal to a more Japanese audience. And so and they even said that a lot of what they did was based off of like Japanese anime and police procedurals. So I guess I shouldn't be surprised that Famitsu really, really likes it. But then again, you know, quality speaks for itself. So.
Right. We'll just have to wait and see in regards to the reviews how it does here stateside. But I mean, for Famitsu to give it pretty darn high reviews is like, yeah. Again, they can be known to be unkind. So. Like, to impress them, it's saying something. It's saying something, to say the least. And just by seeing the gameplay from Gamescom, like that, especially from Nintendo UK's presentation, is like, ooh, boy, it's, I don't know, it's just building up the hype of, like, again, changing legions, like, just the amount of stuff you do, including the point, like, and I just actually read the dev post that they talked about regarding to the user interface as well as, like, how they incorporated the whole selfie system. Like, you actually can use your camera to like take selfies, make pictures, and like it's pretty darn amazing like what these developers like basically implement inside this game so much, like really give it the life of it. So for me, it's just building up my hype.
Yeah, I'm very excited for it, so we'll just continue what rolls out for that as we get closer to the release date next Friday, August 30th. So all right, next up, this is a fun story. We touched on this earlier with the Ori and the Blind Forest coming in. Microsoft has released a statement stating that they have no plans to bring more Xbox exclusives to the Nintendo Switch or PS4. Uh-huh. sure you don't, Xbox.
I personally don't buy it. It's just like with Banjo-Kazooie and with Ori and the Blind Forest, like, you're saying you're not going to stop having any more Microsoft exclusives? There's a perfect chance you can do it. Perfect Dark, I don't know. Or even the next GoldenEye with a proper GoldenEye, I don't know.
Look, they made a big statement, but the crux of it was that as new studios transitioned in, we were aware of some existing commitments to other platforms, and we will honor them. However, going forward, these new studios will focus on making games for our platforms. We have no plans to further expand our exclusive first-party games to other consoles. We continue to believe deeply in cross-play and progression of games, with the right flexibility for developers to ensure a fair and fun experience.
I am really confused as to why you guys don't believe that. Well, like, that's a pretty definitive statement.
Well, it does, and I acknowledge that. But then again, we weren't supposed to get Cuphead on Switch. Like, that was Xbox exclusive, and that was, and it sold really well there. And yet, for whatever reason,
I disagree. I mean, the Cuphead rumors were swirling almost as soon as that game launched. There were talks that it might come to Switch, and never forget E3 2018 when they announced the Cuphead DLC. That there was no. It wasn't, they didn't say console exclusive. It was world premiere.
Yeah.
And we kind of knew right then that it was coming to Switch. Yeah, I think that they're serious here. I mean, maybe, as they said, they have previous commitments, so maybe there are other plans in the works that have already been in the works, and maybe there's some of those plans will be huge. But I don't expect it. I do think that they're probably done, and they should be. I mean, they have their new console coming out imminently. I guess within 18 months, they're going to have a new console launch. They're going to want everybody focused on making that the platform to play games on. So why would they be giving their stuff to Switch? I mean, I think the only reason we're seeing this now, and we're not seeing Switch games on Xbox, is it's because Nintendo is doing great and Microsoft is struggling. I mean, that's really where... This partnership is stemming from is both parties are thinking, hey, we can make a little extra money by teaming up right now. But Microsoft really seems to have their act together, as kind of veiled and unimpressive as their E3 reveal for, I can't even remember the name of the new project that tells you how forgettable it was, I do think that they have the right idea with stacking their development or their new developers on making content for the new system. And I don't think we're going to see anything new on Switch.
Well, look, I wasn't saying that Xbox wasn't going to try and keep their games on there, but sometimes there's these extenuating circumstances that lead to these games coming to other systems, like what we saw with Cuphead and Ori. And there's going to be times when their developers, whether the first party or not, if they can get an opportunity to put it on other, you know, systems, they're going to try, especially if the sales just aren't what they want it to be, which with the Xbox, honestly, is a distinct possibility.
It is, though. You're right. It's possible that could happen down the road. It could happen. But I don't think now we're going to see anything like that. I mean, I don't think they said, oh, forever, there's never a chance that we will ever release a game for another platform ever again. But they're talking in the immediate future.
Yeah.
And if the Xbox launches and it's very successful, they will certainly not bring games over to other platforms.
Yeah. Again, it's a fun situation, but it's just hilarious that they say that right after Ori was announced for this. So it's like, oh, you guys get Ori, and we gave you Cuphead. That's it. That's all you get. And they're like, well, what about? No. We're done. You hear me? We gave you enough. Okay? That's what it sounds like to them. All right, moving on. So Luigi's Mansion 3 had a little bit of a spotlight at Gamescom 2019, including a 30-minute gameplay footage, which introduced a new level of the hotel, one with plants, thorns, piles of leaves, and other points of interest. So basically a greenhouse area, which probably means we're going to see carnivorous plants, Will.
Hey, blame that on Bernie. On Bernie.
I mean, should I really be surprised that Bernie likes carnivorous plants? I'm just saying. But I'm excited for this game. I have not watched the video yet, but it's Luigi's Mansion, and you know the E3 presentation that they had at the treehouse both times was really, really fun. And again, we're only a few months away from that, so it's exciting that it's getting all this attention because it's clear Nintendo wants this to succeed.
Yeah, that's the next first-party game that I have circled off is Luigi's Mansion 3. Every time they show the game, it looks great. I saw just some screenshots of it. Visually, the game has improved so much since its initial reveal last September.
Oh, yeah.
The Next Level has done a great job of kind of tuning this thing. I expect it to be a return to form.
The only question is if they do decide to do Luigi's Mansion 4, which they could technically put on the Switch if they start working on it soon enough, where would they go from here? Because the hotel idea is cool, because that feels fresh, and yet it still feels key enough to the Luigi's Mansion aesthetic. But where would they go outside of a hotel or a regular mansion for Luigi's Mansion 4 if they were to do it?
Let's see, we did the mansion deal, we did a hotel deal. Yep. What other big skyscrapers are there? Like, I don't know, a tower
cool.
A mountain
or
mansion.
What if we go a little bit outside the box and do a cruise liner?
I mean, that would be the lot.
It's a mansion at sea, if you think about it. It's a mansion at sea, so like imagine him going through that big boat with all the different decks and everything. It'd be like the hotel feel, but on the sea, which would add, you know, different visuals. And there could be sea ghosts. Why not?
Right. Or we could also like do one thing. Actually, Mario games have explored to space. How about space?
In space, everyone can hear Luigi scream. So. What about you, Tyler? What do you think? Do you think the cruise ship could work? Do you want to see space? What do you want to see?
I like the cruise ship idea. That's a strong. That could be great for sure.
Yeah. Ooh, I got an idea. What if it really like the hotel? It seems like a regular cruise ship, and then a ghost like creature like takes it over and is literally dragging it through the waters. And so the end boss is you facing the ghost that's dragging the ship around.
Oh, you know what might be great? Yeah. You could do an amusement park. A theme.
Ooh.
That would be pretty fun. You could get all sorts of shenanigans that way.
I like that. And of course, that would allow you to have a mini mansion as an attraction ride.
Yeah, yeah. And like then the final battle in the House of Mirrors is unmatched. You have to. And you can't. I know it's a cliche, but.
No, that's a beautiful cliche, especially with how Luigi's Mansion works. So, oh man, this is why we need to work for Nintendo, man. I mean, we just gave them Luigi's Mansion 4 and 5. Done. Yeah. Ugh, one day. Me before you, though. Moving on. I'm kidding. All right. Okay, this one I really want to talk about because outside of my Nintendo life, there are certain things that I enjoy. I know that's hard to believe. And the biggest thing is these internet shows that I enjoy. You've heard us talk about Death Battle, which I really love. And the other shows I really like are the Honest trailers, both the movies and the video games. Well, the team that did the Honest Games trailers, Smosh Games, they had to shut down because of money issues and et cetera, et cetera. And then they came back, but they came back well after Smash Bros. Ultimate came out. And so they've been playing a little bit of catch up, and now they release their Honest trailer for Super Smash Bros. Ultimate, and it's just as funny as you'd expect. It is brutal. It is honest. It talks about it being a cash grab and, you know, pleasing the fanboys who ask if Donkey Kong could beat Cloud Strife in a matchup. And they went really long with it because they, if you don't know Honest trailers, not only do they go brutally honest, they give nicknames to all the main characters. And because this is a fighting game, they have 75 characters that they have to give nicknames to. And they do it every single one. Some of them are really hilarious. So if you haven't seen this yet, go and watch it. It's really worth it. And you'll be laughing it right before you play Smash Brothers again. So.
Mm-hmm.
It's the little things, you know? It's the little things that make you smile. Alright, so we already talked about the Dragon Quest XI demo. We'll outline that a little bit. It's free to download. You can download it now, and then the game comes out on the 27th, right?
Yeah, there,
September
yes.
27th, so a week after Link's Awakening. So definitely go check that out. Next up are a couple of stories that lead up into our main event. First up, GameStop has gotten a screenshot taken, because of course it did, of its internal servers, because of course it did, of upcoming SKU games, which if you don't know, that's, what was it, Will? Self-contained units? Shelf stocking units?
Stock,
what was it?
Stocking units.
Basically, it's games that don't have names yet, but are going to be coming. And apparently, counting now, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. There's 14 new SKUs that are going to be coming out to GameStop, apparently, in the next period of time. And usually, these kind of leaks, which by their own notes, state that when this happens, it usually means that a Nintendo Direct is coming. So
yeah, no, I it should probably come, I would say, first or second week in September. So
obviously we don't know if that's fully true, and if it is, it's not a guarantee that we're going to have, like, you know, 12 to 14 brand new games announced. However, given that we know the rest of the year, especially now that we have Luigi's Mansion, the release date for it, we need to start planning for 2020, which at present all we have is Animal Crossing, which is good. But it's not enough for a whole year. Although I'm sure some Animal Crossing fans would say, oh, Todd, you can play it the whole year. Okay, yes. I don't want to. Okay? So, but this would be the time, with it being like well into the later half of the year, for them to start revealing their 2020 lineup, or at least teasing it. And of course, last year, when they did the September Nintendo Direct, we got announcements for Smash Brothers. We got the reveal of Luigi's Mansion 3. We got the new Animal Crossing game announced. And et cetera, et cetera. So, it's possible we are getting in the next few weeks, so stay tuned for that. And finally, a piece of news that makes us all so ecstatic, Fire Emblem Three Houses. Oh, yes, we have even more news on that, because apparently, remember when we talked about the sales numbers, how it did basically over 1.5 million sales in the world, if not more? Yeah. Well, apparently now we are hearing that 800,000 units were sold digitally. Yeah. It sold almost a million units digitally. And to be clear, that does not, the MPD does not include digital sales numbers. I'm pretty sure most of the other countries don't either. So we just found out about this. So that could mean, and this isn't confirmed, but it could mean that the number we got before, the 1.5 million, was just the physical copies. And then if you add the digital, that means it's already sold 2.3 million just in July alone.
Ooh, boy.
Yeah.
Absolutely bonkers. We made it. I was so excited when I saw this. Now, we figured that the digital sales would be good given the voucher system. Yeah. But that is a crazy number of digital sales. I didn't expect it. I highly doubt Intelligent Systems expected it. I know there were, because the game, again, was immensely popular upon release. There were reports of shortages in a lot of different countries. I don't know if North America had an issue. I pre-ordered, so I didn't have that problem. But maybe that also drove up the digital sales. Still crazy. In just 5 days, that's how much it sold digitally.
Yeah.
I mean, this is going to smash all the Fire Emblem records by far.
Last I checked, I believe it pretty much is the best selling in the series. Last I checked, you want to clarify?
If what I said earlier was true about the physical copies being what we heard earlier and the digital copies just being released now, that would make it 2.3 million. Awakening only sold about 2.1. So that would definitively make it. And even if it didn't, even if it was like a mix and we're still at 2 million right now, you know, that's just July sales. There's no way it hasn't sold, you know, 100,000 in the 22 days of August that we're on right now.
All right. But yeah, like, Nintendo pretty much marketed this thing very heavily to the point. So, I mean, it just shows that marketing does help. And plus, again, with the E3 Treehouse demos, just showing it off. I mean, yeah, this is how you kind of build up hype and response to a game's release. It just works well.
Disagree with that. Like, I think that I do. I mean, you're not wrong. Like, they marketed it better than they marketed previous Fire Emblem games. And it's just my feeling on it. But I don't think this game had good marketing until the E3 of this year. Like, there were so many questions we didn't know.
Yeah.
And just, it was such a hazy, constantly getting delayed, and we didn't know why, and there were mysteries. Okay, the battalion, remember back when they first showed the game, they had the battalion where everybody formed a triangle, and it, like, lighted up, and then they charged forward. And, like, even I was thinking about it when I was driving to work the other day. The battle map that they showed to demo the game with Edelgard, that's not in the game. It didn't make the final copy of it. Like, there's just so much stuff that this game had lost and added and morphed. I had no idea what it was until a month before it launched. I really think that Fire Emblem Heroes deserves a lot of credit for the launch that it had. I mean, that's just my thought. You might be right, Will. People may have really responded to the marketing campaign. I really didn't until the final stretch.
Which, if you think about it, that's the only point that matters, is the final stretch, because that's when the hype is really going to be at its peak, when it's getting really close. And like you said, E3 was obviously a big point for it. I loved the Treehouse sessions, where they were talking about the classes and like the literal classes of you teaching the students, and then the battles. Like, they showed the second Death Knight mission with Flayne, and, you know, that was an important one. And I actually remembered that one so well that I knew which teleporter to take.
Nice.
I remembered it because my future wife Audrey played it, and just like, well, I know exactly which one I need to go to, and then she goes to it, and I'm like, okay, I'll remember that, and so I did. And but like, that really, I love the Treehouse at E3 because it gets me more excited for the games, and that's why I was more excited for Three Houses and Luigi's Mansion and Daemon X Machina and Astral Chain, etc., etc. But no, you're both right in that Nintendo definitely plugged this one more, especially with its conjunction with Heroes. But you're also right, Tyler, in that, you know, I think it was Heroes that really helped propel it because of how well the game's been doing. And then they did, like, the banner right just before the game came out with Byleth and, of course, and then Edelgard, Claude, and Dimitri, which was a big thing. Again, I got all four at 170 orbs, not bragging all. But so yeah, I think you're both right. It's definitely, and then I also think, and this is just me being my personal opinion, I think the review scores also helped
because
you know, I talked about it earlier that in a previous podcast that there were some sites that just never really liked Fire Emblem and then only gave it like certain scores. I was wrong on one of the sites. IGN has apparently given Fire Emblem a lot of good scores, but when they hear from, you know, IGN and GameSpot and all these other things that, you know, it's absolute absolutely awesome. You know, it's near perfect. It's so deep. It's infinitely replayable, which is a word that you don't hear a lot outside of, you know, like Fortnite and Minecraft and everything, because they're built to be replayable. This is infinitely replayable. There's 4 storylines, an infinite amount of ways you can build your team, lots of relationships you can build up or not. And, you know, I think when they heard that and they read the reviews for that, that really helped sell them. And usually I don't say that because most times you know if a game's going to be good. But with Fire Emblem, which is still, even with the success of Awakening Fates and even Shadows of Valentia to a smaller degree, and then, of course, Heroes, there's that, will this one be good enough? And then, like you said, Tyler, there was the delays, which crippled me. It crippled me like Spider-Man right now is crippling you.
Right.
You know, that was the low point. I mean, you all heard me on the podcast. I was like, why isn't it here yet? And so... And now I'm like, no, I gotta beat it because I gotta get through this before I get to Astral Chain. Like that's how much a month has changed me. All right, so I think it's definitely a perfect storm of things, and we are all incredibly happy for the sales, and I hope we get another definitive number soon. And even if we have to wait for the next Nintendo earnings report, so be it. But when was the last time you heard of a Nintendo game selling 800,000 digitally? Like they singled that out. I don't remember. Like I would bet.
Yeah, I don't either. I mean, I'm sure Mario Kart sold better digitally, and their top selling games.
Mario Kart, Smash Brothers,
Odyssey, maybe even Zelda. I don't know, but they never singled those out. All they said was like, "Oh, it sold, you know, 2.4 million in 3 days." They never said digital sales, but they said specifically that the digital sales was 800,000 for Fire Emblem Three Houses, and that's awesome because most games don't sell 800,000 in their lives. Period. Like, physical and digital. And this game, this awesome, awesome game, 4.5 out of 5, gave it 800,000 in 5 days, digitally. That's incredible. That's incredible. Oh, speaking of which, Tyler.
Yes.
Do you now concede that Fire Emblem is not a 5 out of 5 game?
Three Houses? No, I would still say it's a 5 out of 5.
Ugh.
Yeah, it's a 5 out of 5 for me. I mean, listen, I do think it's too easy, but I don't think any game is like truly 100% perfect. And we'll see when Lunatic comes out, like if that is what I think it could be, if they make the right adjustments and don't just, you know, throw stat boosts on enemies. Yeah, I mean, I think it's going to be, it's pretty perfect. I mean, there's visually, like, there's some goofy things for sure. Visually, like, you'll see, I haven't experienced, like, characters walking into each other or walking out of bounds, but I see the clips on Twitter. And, I mean, that's goofy, but it just does not detract from the masterpiece that this game is.
Okay, just thought I'd ask.
No, it's a good question. Fair question.
Yeah, again, just differencing of opinions, which is why I have the correct one and I'm the host. Moving on.
Right. You like Xenoblade Chronicles 2, so
yeah,
your opinion automatically is.
I did not give that game a 5 out of 5, though. I said it was a 4.5 out of 5. And I noted some of the flaws, like Rex being annoying at times, certain graphical issues that I had, and the rather complex combat system. It was not all the time. I played it on handheld mode and it wasn't all the time. It was just during certain moments. Anyway. We're not getting into this. All right. So in lieu of the digital sales thing, we're going to be talking in our main event about a certain thing that happened recently with GameStop, in which they had to lay off a large amount of their workers. And it's been noted that digital sales have really been improving lately. And so this got us to wondering, are stores like GameStop slowly becoming irrelevant? And we'll get into more into this in a Nintendo discussion. All right, Tyler, I'll let you take this off because this was basically your idea. So
yes.
Please explain what happened to GameStop and what you think this is to the game industry right now.
Right, so restructuring at, I guess, is GameStop like the overarching company? I believe it is. Resulted in, I think, 120 corporate job losses, seven of which were Game Informer staff writers. I think they said they had 38 writers or staff members before the cuts, so that really did cut it into like almost a 25% cut or 20% cut to their staff. So not great. You know, we obviously hope that the people who got laid off can bounce back and find new employment. I'm sure that they will. But this got me thinking about kind of in conjunction with Fire Emblem's huge digital sales and the way that audiences consume games. It got me thinking about GameStop's role in and other, I guess, walk-in stores, their role in the current gaming landscape and how they can get people back into their doors and what we think they should offer that would kind of make their services relevant again. If that makes sense. So I guess for me, like one of the first things that I thought of with GameStop, the one that I have right across the street is always, always empty, except for when they put on events. So I think that if a company like GameStop should be going out of their way to kind of host like fighting game tournaments, more midnight launches, things like that, that kind of get gamers excited and focus less on actually selling, because it's so easy to just go download a game online now. So many people like to do that, even though I believe all three of us are physical guys still. I think the best way for companies like that to get people into their building is going to be through providing services beyond just selling games.
Like, for me, like, of course, naturally, I'm kind of sad regarding to the GameStop, but at the same time, again, as you know, with public image of GameStop, they're not really viewed favorably because, one, naturally, is regarding to the whole buyback, tradeback deals, because, again, if you're trying to, like, sell a game at GameStop, you pretty much got, like, nickels and dimes, like, $5, maybe $15 at best if you're, like, a pro member. But, yeah, like, regarding to the whole buyback, tradeback deals, like, that's kind of the one thing that got that one a lot of people do not like about them. Then you have regarding to, like, yeah, just, I mean, perhaps it's, like, just with the sales, of course, like, with the whole front of going digital, like, some people, like, wondering if, like, physical retailers will have a place in here, which, personally for me, I still want my physical games. Regardless of anything that happened, if we are going to a digital market route, I still want my physical games. I want something in my hands, like, to show, like, yeah, this is a game, I have it in my hands, it is physical value. Like, in case something happens to PSN, Xbox One, or even the eShop, like, if something happens, at least I know I have a backup physical copy I can play with. So, regarding to the whole situation of, like, yeah, like, if, like, hypothetically speaking, if GameStop, like, were to go null and void and be out of business, like, again, that only leaves, like, Best Buy, Amazon, like, Target even, like, to some extent, to, like, really fill in the void of gaming titles. And I don't know, it feel, like, even though gaming is, like, a major market in this economy, like, I still feel like that a lot of people basically consider it as, like, that, again, the childish hobby, even though it is a big part of the economy. So if it were up to me, like, one way to improve GameStop's image and perhaps presence in this growing, ever-changing market is, like, yeah, probably as you said, Ty, like, maybe, like, be more, like, more community-based, like, really open up to, like, celebrate the art form that it is, like, have tournaments, get-togethers, midnight releases, like, definitely more on the midnight release part, because, again, this is, like, for big games, and I don't know, it just feels like there's that sense, like, they are friendly to the gamers, but at the same time, they're not friendly to gamers. They have that, like, dual image that really they're trying to fight against.
Yeah, with GameStop, GameStop is a unique case because they have this history of being both a good store and a terrible store, because we've all heard, like, the resale stories. They basically go Pawn Stars. Oh, I can give you a quarter for these 1,000 games. That's the best I can do. And, you know, a friend of mine named Karen, she's in Canada. She works with me actually on another podcast I used to do. She went to a GameStop and she had pre-ordered a game and they didn't have it registered, even though she had this ticket showing that it was registered. And then she had to go through like three different people at the store and then the manager just to get the game. And then she couldn't get the pre-order bonuses, even though she had the ticket saying that she had the pre-order bonus, because they didn't know what the frick they were doing. I kid you not. And it was just like, what is going on? And I know there are other stories like this. And so like, how do you combat what's going on here? Now, much like the comic industry, which I think is very similar to video games in many respects, there is the question of physical comics versus digital comics. I came into the comic book industry thinking that it would be digital sales that were my biggest, and they haven't been by a long shot. My best thing was when I started printing them out myself and went to Comic Cons, and then I went to Amazon and I got my own private store where people could go and get my books there because they trust Amazon. So, which is still a physical sale, but it's on a digital platform. And that's why Amazon, or even things like Best Buy online or stuff like that, Target, even like you said, Will, like the last two Switch games I got, Three Houses and Marvel Ultimate Alliance 3, I got at Target because it was close by and I had a feeling they would have it because they have a big focus on their video game sections. And yet, when I went to try and get Pokemon Let's Go Eevee, I went to a Meijer, which is a grocery mega grocery store like Walmart, but, you know, kinder at times. And I also used to work there. But they didn't have a copy in on the day it was released. They go, oh, yeah, we didn't get it in. I'm like, how do you not get it in? It's a new game. And they go, we just didn't get it in. So I had to go to, like, a couple different stores. And then there were times where I even went to Walmart to get a game, and they didn't have it because they just didn't have the physical edition. Oh, you can only buy it online. Okay. That's weird, but what are you going to do? And so, you know, first of all, it's never good when people get laid off, all right? I speak from experience on this. It's never fun, and I feel bad for all those people. But it does raise the question, you know, can they survive? Yes, I think they can, but they need to do more to make themselves, like Tyler said, more than just a video game store. Like when I went with my friend Leia to a GameStop recently for her birthday, and they had, you know, gaming gear, they had, you know, gaming toy items aside from the games that they had, and Leia even bought some of that stuff. So if they become more of a one-stop gaming shop, which a lot of them are, but, you know, even like re-emphasize that, you know, we sell more than just video games, then that's something else that they can go to, because you're going to find stuff in there that I would bet you don't find very easily online, like something that Amazon might not have right there in front of you to get, like Pokemon plushies or certain cosplay gear, if you will, you know, or Star Wars socks, because why the heck not, you know? So diversification in this modern era almost is essential, and with video games becoming more and more digitally focused, with the, you know, like some of them needing requiring online connections, and then the infinite amounts of memory card that we can get, which I probably should get for my Switch, but whatever, and, you know, so on and so forth. They need to, in my opinion, they need to do more. Like, I loved your gaming tournaments idea, Tyler. Like, that would be awesome, and that would be a great way to boost them up in the communities, because it's not just about, you know, worldwide how's GameStop doing, it's how each store is doing in the right community they're in. Gaming tournaments are a lightning fast way to build up rapport with their community. Like, oh, I could go to Best Buy, but hey, remember when we did that gaming tournament at GameStop? Oh yeah, that was cool. We should go drop by, buy the game, and see if they're doing another one soon. That's how quick it is. And we gamers think like that. All right. I'll always remember one time I did a Mario Kart tournament at Walmart. All right. I didn't know it was there. I did it. I literally, to the nanosecond, I tied the previous winner, and then he came back and beat me. But that's beside the point. All right, it was a memory, and I remember that, and I often go to Walmart because of memories like that, or I'll go to Meijer because of what it did for Fire Emblem for me, and et cetera, and et cetera. And I went to Target two times in a row because I knew the people, or I knew that the people will respond to me, and sure enough, the lady who sold me Fire Emblem Three Houses was there when I bought Ultimate Alliance 3. She goes, oh, did you beat Marvel already? And I'm like, oh, you remember me. She goes, yeah, you're kind of hard to forget. And I go, yeah, and don't worry, I'm not going to be back for a while because this is going to take a while. And she laughed, you know, and I'm going to remember that when I go get Astral Chain, which I'll probably get at Target. So it's about the rapport.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the customer service is key. And it's also, you touched on a great point when you focused on the fact that a lot of these platforms, GameStop included, have online marketplaces. But getting people into the store is the major battle, I think. I mean, the last time, every time I go into a GameStop, it's vacant. It's me and one or two other people at most, and then the cashiers. And there's some cool stuff in there. Once you walk into a store like GameStop, as a gamer, I'm always just, I want to look at everything. I want to see even the games for systems I don't have. It's just, it's fun. It's fun to be surrounded by all the merchandise, the amiibos, the plushies, and then, of course, all the games, and just checking out the box arts, and then you're tempted to buy. They really need to figure out how to get people to come into the stores, hence the tournament idea. But I'm sure they could do tons of other things. As you said, great customer service is a perfect place to start.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. It's a struggle because we all have such short attention spans, but that's where, honestly, like, the internet can be your biggest friend. You know, if all these GameStops tried to reach out to their local communities via social media and everything, and they posted articles and local places, or they put ads about, you know, hey, there's a local tournament going on in, you know, Champaign, Illinois, which is where I live, and then I'll go to, okay, I know where that GameStop is, and hey, there's a Smash tournament there. Oh, I can get $50 gift card for GameStop. You know, if you offer a $50 GameStop gift card, okay, make it $60 because that's what really a game costs these days. You know, they'll come, and then they'll stick around because it's like, oh yeah, we gotta watch the end of the tournament, and then they might buy something even though they didn't win the card. You know, all it takes is that little incentive, and you can change things.
Now you're definitely there's certainly a cap in this digital era with Amazon. Like, I think your casual shopper's first spot is always just going to be going online. But GameStop really probably should do a better job of recognizing that and shifting its services more towards the hardcore gamer, the people like us who will walk into a store, like whose dream in New York City is to go into the Nintendo, you know, what's the name of the building? I didn't even think of it. But,
Nintendo,
you know,
Nintendo World. Nintendo New York.
Yeah.
Well,
so,
because funny enough, they actually released, I think, another store in, like, the Middle East, like, or Singapore. They also released another location. But yeah,
Singapore.
For example, like Nintendo New York. Yeah, like Nintendo New York is like exactly like what GameStop should be doing. Like, again, as a celebration of games, no matter what, like even like for like the Sony store or Microsoft store here in New York is like, yeah, they should probably like really celebrate the art form of what it is, like tournaments and all that. Yeah.
Sorry, go ahead, Dad.
No, please, go ahead, man.
Oh, I was going to shift gears, actually, over to kind of Game Informer in general, but...
Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so, I mean, Game Informer is a publication that I always loved reading growing up, outside of the fact that Tim Curry gave Sonic Generations a 6.5 and crashed it, and I never forgave him for that. but it's very... The average gamer has such a skewed perception of what video game media should be. And I do think that Game Informer is one of the best publications for gaming and gaming reporting out there. And I think that there's still a role for that. And I wish that they didn't cut those jobs. I mean, obviously, you know, you don't want anybody to lose jobs. But gaming, much like sports, is first and foremost fun. So I don't think that any of us really care too much about the, like, you know, there's scandals in the gaming industry. I don't think that that's intriguing to us on that level. But hearing developer stories and learning kind of the process of making our favorite games, things like that are fascinating. And you really don't see quite enough of it, at least done at a high level, by amateur publications or by even on YouTube. Like, most of the pop biggest channels are personality driven, column based kind of opinion articles, and there's just not a lot of hard facts that people really like that are out there. And I just think it's a shame that Game Informer, one of the better publications at telling those stories, has to kind of suffer like this.
Yeah, it's bad, and again, hopefully they can bounce back. It's a hope, but you know, it's another one of these dangers. It's, you know, what is making us the most amount of money, what's making us the least amount of money, and I guess Game Informer was just affected in that, and it's sad. And you know, you always hear about these things like the smaller sites dying off because they don't get, you know, enough backing, or they don't have enough viewers and everything. We're lucky here at Outer Haven to, you know, be doing well enough, and you know, we've been doing this podcast for over 2 years now, so you know, yay us. And, you know, then you hear something about, like, Game Informer or remember the Nintendo Power magazine?
Rest in peace, I still remember.
So it's just, you know, you always hear about these things that they're going away after a long time, and it's really sad, but you hope that the people bouncing back, or so the people who lost their jobs will bounce back, or maybe the magazine will come back in a bigger way or whatever, and... Yeah, it's sad. It's one of the sad realities of our world, and especially, you know, the news world where just not everything can last.
What type of news story / I don't consider it have to be news, but what type of journalism would you like to see more of in the gaming space?
I like your talk about developers. I do see, like with Astral Chain right now, like they're doing dev blogs from Platinum about the game, and that's really cool. And I remember, if you remember when the original Splatoon was announced at E3, they did basically a dev video about about how they came up with the idea of the Squid Kids and everything, and the idea of Splatoon. And then, like, even though it was a horrible game, I remember Miyamoto talking about Star Fox Zero. That E3 and how he just thought he wanted to go back to the beginning of sorts, and that's why it's called Zero and everything. And I like the idea of the developers. Like, I always read news articles about, you know, the developer talks about this. Like Todd McFarlane, after Spawn was officially revealed in the recent trailer, the DLC trailer, he talked about how I went and saw the footage of Spawn, and it's not done yet, but it was looking really cool. And I was telling them, you can go crazier, like go crazy with this. It's Spawn. You know, like, that's really cool because, you know, he's just showing his personality by talking about his creation in a Mortal Kombat game. And at any time Aonuma talks about Zelda, like, I'm always interested.
Oh, yeah.
He's very eloquent. He knows what he's talking about, and he's just a great guy. So I definitely like the idea of more dev talks and dev videos and interviews and, you know, very personal talks that eventually shed light on gaming. Because, you know, these are people too, and that sometimes gets lost.
Yeah, I'm pretty much in agreement with you. Like, just hearing all these, like people from different walks of life, including, like, again, from Dev Talks. I mean, Yoko Taro of Nier Automata, I mean, you only recognize him because of his mask he always wears. But again, he is, like, one of those different, like, archers of gaming that's, like, he does something unique. And, of course, like, with Hideo Kojima with Death Stranding, like, he's the definition of an archer in video games ever since from the Konami days. So, and, like, hearing, like, Hideo Kojima, like, talking about Death Stranding during Gamescom, like, that's the one thing I'd, like, want to know, like, what makes them tick? And, of course, Kojima is just, like, he's insane to insane to the point, like, his stories make no sense, but at the same time does make sense, is, like, yeah, I want to hear more regarding to, like, yeah, as I said, like, more of these, like, what makes them tick? What is their inspiration? How did Pokemon became, like influence from book catching, or like how like with Zelda, like with Breath of the Wild, how like just simple climbing mountains throughout the world is like representing of like real life and hit in Aonuma's days. Like, just like, I want to know what kind of ideas that always flows in their mind that makes these great experiences that can be shared throughout the public. That's what I like to know more. Yeah.
Although I do want to draw the line at asking Kojima why he has a urination minigame in Death Stranding. I don't need to know that. Well, Todd, I was going to the bathroom one day. No, I'm good. I'm good, Kojima. You don't need to go anymore.
Have you not seen Metal Gear Solid 3? Have you not played that game?
Yes, I have.
So you know. Remember, there is a point you actually can get released on, to say the least.
It's been a while. It's been a while, so I forgive me for not remembering that. But still.
And, just a brief topic. Because, again, apparently, like, there's got to be a lot of cameos. So, apparently, all those cameo players, including Sakurai, that made stop at Kojima. So, who knows? Maybe you see Sakurai in the fanning. You never know.
Which, of course, means we're going to get Norman Reedus in Smash Brothers as his character.
Oh, like, my gosh.
This is confirmation out the wazoo.
This is more convincing than the Shantae window.
That's mean. That's mean. See, the Smash logo was the window. Why can't you see it?
Yeah. Well, I just want to say, I would like to see a little bit more of what Did You Know Gaming does. They're one of the few YouTube channels that I think does a more hard news kind of take. I mean, it's not current, of course, but I like how they go super far in depth on very specific topics. That always interests me. All of their, I think they recently did something on Waluigi and like Nintendo rumors of you know, dating back to the beginning of, I mean, in the NES days. All of those stories are really interesting to me. I love when they get into super specific details about things that I've loved in the past that I just would have never known had I not come across
that
video.
I would like hit more history too. Like there's a TV show on the late G4 network. G4, I miss you so. I need a minute. Okay. They had a show called Game Makers. And it was basically the history of video games one topic at a time. And that's where I learned about, like, Donkey Kong Country. You think about it, this is a great franchise, and Nintendo loved it, right? Well, kind of, because Miyamoto didn't like it. He didn't like the new direction that Rare was taking it in. But it was selling, so Nintendo kept making it. And then, like, Miyamoto talked about how he got contacted to do Donkey Kong. Why? Because the previous arcade game made by Nintendo called Radar Scope failed horribly, and they go, we need a new direction, we need a storyteller, enter Shigeru Miyamoto. And that's how his tenure in Nintendo got started. And, you know, on and on. I like these history things because, you know, we all remember when games are announced or, you know, like when a big trailer was revealed, but I like the history of like what led to that moment. Like when they did one on Majora's Mask, and they talked about how, you know, they had to do it in a year because they wanted to capitalize on the momentum of Ocarina of Time. And so they made the game with the time traveling and the 3-day timeline because they were trying to make this game in a year.
Yeah.
And that's cool to me. I love history. So that's I would love to see that too. So. Oh, I got it. Outer Haven, the magazine.
It's perfect.
There you go. All right. Well, with that, we are going to end this episode of the Nintendo Entertainment Podcast. Tyler!
Yes, last week we asked you, I remember the results, not the question.
It was about the music.
We asked you what Nintendo should Nintendo continue to remove its music from non-affiliated YouTube channels? 0% said yes. We were not happy about that. 75% said no, and 25% said if they make it available elsewhere. You know, we got some Nintendo loyalists who believe in a Nintendo music service, but most of us would prefer if they just would leave it up.
Well, it's just what we talked about this last week. We talked about like having a Nintendo YouTube music channel, which would be perfect. That gets them money because of views, and it gives them watches and everything, which is more attention for their games. That's a very simple solution. Why they haven't done that, I don't know. It's so dang simple. And they don't even need videos. All they need is like a Rolodex of screenshots if they want to. You know, that they don't need much. They just need the music up. So, you know, there's options out there for Nintendo. It's just what, once again, Nintendo sees three steps ahead in many avenues, and then they see, you know, they're three steps behind in other ones. So that's just par for the course of Nintendo. All right, so this week's question, let's just go right off of our main event. Do you think stores like GameStop will eventually become irrelevant because of digital sales?
You know what? How about we do – I think that question at the end is actually pretty interesting. I wonder what people think about what type of stories would get them reading gaming publications more often.
I like that. Let's do that. So what news – what stories or topics would get you to read a gaming magazine more? Pure news – interviews with developers, histories, or top 10 lists, because who doesn't love those?
Yeah.
Top 10 best Fire Emblem lords. Ike, Marth, Ike, Crump. But Todd, what about okay, honorable mention, you monster! So, yeah. So let us know what you think on that. And of course, what did you think of Nintendo's recent indie world? Did any of those games catch your attention? Which upcoming Mortal Kombat DLC character are you most interested in? Are you counting down the days till Astral Chain? What do you think of me and Tyler's ideas for Luigi's Mansions 4 and 5? And which one should come out first? Mine, because I'm the host. And are you going to try out the Dragon Quest XI demo? Do let us know. So, for Tellius Tyler, Warrior Will, I am Triforce Todd, and ladies and gentlemen, we are out of time. We are not out of lives. We've made it to the end of the level, so raise the flag.